Got
Here's
three.
Radford with 2 seconds. 1 second for the win!
Oh!
And the revenge tour is complete. Xavier, you're 2022 NIT champs.
And congratulations to the Musketeers of Xavier for being the 69th best team in NCAA men's basketball this year. They win last night. 23-13 was their record. They beat Texas A&M in the NIT Championship, Madison Square Garden. Welcome to Sports Ticket. Wade Gershon with you, along with Dusty Dynas and Jason Broadfoot. I cannot believe. This is amazing. You see it, don't you? Dusty is wearing KU Jayhawk athletic gear.
Yep.
I am very impressed.
It's powder blue up there.
Jason and I understand.
We can see that at first, but
there's a little
front,
line.
That front, it's all Jayhawk colors.
That Jayhawk logo on there looks really good. I mean, you know, you pick KU to win it all. You knew they were going to win it all. You feel confident about it. It's the first time I've ever seen you actually walk in here with Jayhawk gear. I am blown away. I mean, it's amazing. There's a K and a J, Kansas Jayhawks.
There it is.
It's pretty phenomenal stuff. I didn't think it was ever possible, but he's come over from the dark side. Yeah.
Yeah, every listener in North Central Kansas knows what day it is, too.
So. No, they don't. I can assure you they don't. Because if they did, they wouldn't fall for many of the things that I pulled and then call up complaining about what I'm talking
about. Well, they should
by
now, then.
No, well, they don't. They maybe more have caught on, but yes. Today is April Fool's Day. I didn't know if Dusty was aware of it or not. April Fool's Day.
I actually ran a couple ads for a sponsor here this week. Millet Hardware's having their 15th anniversary sale. And so my start of the ad is, we're not fooling, right? I was very aware that it was coming up. Mm-hmm.
Darn it. Anyway, April Fool's Day. Jason's not a big fan of April Fool's Day.
Nah.
Yeah. What about you, Dusty? Are you?
There was one particular year where I really wasn't a fan of it, but for the most part, that's the only year I've really ever been fooled on anything. Caught me when I was just not even close to awake yet.
I remember we pulled it on him. It was Mike Schrant and myself. We pulled it on Dusty, and Dusty kept arguing. He goes, "Well, that's not really a joke. That's believable. That's the point. It has to be believable in order for us to pull it off."
There's so many things that are extremely believable like that, right? Compared to like LSU coming out and saying we're going to make a purple football field next year, right?
Right.
Those are the April Fool's jokes that I'm
they
used
are
to, right?
Oh, okay. They are. That'd be cool.
I don't remember what year it was they did that, and everybody just lost their minds.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Colts did, I think, like a blue field deal too or something. Uh-huh. The Colts did something 1 year too.
Yeah.
Everybody just losing their minds. It's like, you know what day it is, right?
Yeah.
You don't believe anything.
It's amazing how gullible people can be. That's the fun part of April Fool's Day. I've always usually been the instigator, not usually the victim of it.
I think that's my whole contention on what you guys did is like, that's not like even really being that gullible, to be completely honest with you.
Nah.
Because what happened there could easily happen. And so gullible is like...
I didn't say you're gullible. I just we pulled one on
but
you.
But that's the one, when you said gullible right there, that's why I don't feel bad about it.
I don't say you're gullible. I'm talking like a lot of people are very gullible.
Typically, I'm not gullible, right?
To me, people that, my definition of gullible is people that buy far-fetched stuff like you just said.
Yeah.
You know, what we did to you years ago wasn't far-fetched. It was believable, but you weren't gullible, in my opinion. Had we said something more extreme and you'd fallen for it, then I think you'd say gullible.
Because I don't want to be lumped into those people that were actually believing LSU was going to change
right,
you know, their field the purple.
My mom's gullible.
Yeah.
I mean, I can pull one on her pretty easily, and I did a few times and almost got. I might not be in the will anymore for all I know. That's it. She got the ultimate April Fool's Day prank. She just called me today. So we made a decision today, and you're no longer part of the family. And you're not in the will. Well, okie dokie. Some days I might be believable instead of gullible, but April Fool's Day is today, so be on alert. Kind of like we try to let everybody know about St. Patty's Day, be on alert. Somebody pinches you, you go ahead and slap them like Will Smith slapped Chris Rock, and you'll be fine. You see the latest on that? Is that the cops were actually alerted or called, and Chris Rock is the one that told them, no. So for people that take Will Smith,
how it went down when they said that he wasn't going to press any charges,
But we're talking about when it happened during the award show.
Yeah.
They had actually talked to Chris Rock, apparently, according to the producer, and Chris Rock was like, no. And so they actually had talked about, you know, taking him out, and he refused Will Smith, which I'm sure it kind of went like this: Hey, Will, you kind of need to leave. I'm not leaving. I got an award coming up. Okay. I think that's kind of how it went. Yeah. Because they knew the ratings would be off the charts if he got
there. When did they ask him to leave? Because that award was very quickly after he slapped Chris Rock.
And if you see the break after it happened, there's nobody coming over telling him to leave. No, it's people consoling him.
Denzel Washington and
Tyler Perry.
Assistant Tyler Perry or whoever it all was. And others. Him and talking to him.
Yeah. So anyway, Chris Rock, he had a comedy special Wednesday in Boston. And so it was the first time he had a chance to really talk about it. He didn't really talk about it. He said, later on, I'm still processing it. But he opened his show with, so how was your weekend, everyone? So, but Chris Rock, you know, we talked about, he showed a lot of restraint because he had the right to fire back at Will Smith for self-defense. Everybody would have backed him up on that. But it is interesting that there are some people who are just like, well, Chris Rock deserved what he got, and it was a horrible joke, and it was crossing the line, and so forth. I don't think when you do something like that, you deserve to get slapped or punched, obviously. I don't think that's good. As we talked about, two wrongs don't make a right, so forth and so on. But it's interesting, the people that are on Will Smith's side that seem to think that Chris Rock deserved everything he gotten, which I think are in the minority, those people, actually, it's kind of funny talking so badly about Chris Rock, but without Chris Rock, Will Smith wouldn't have still been in the place. If he decided to press charges right away, Will Smith would have been handcuffed and taken out of that place, according to stories and reports.
Yeah.
And Chris Rock's like, come on, you know, I don't want to make this bigger than the whole thing. And I applaud him for that, because certain people in Chris Rock's position, it might have happened.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been certain people being, well, okay, here's a great opportunity for me, and how dare somebody embarrass me on national television and slap me? I'm going to get him out, and I know he's going to be up for the Oscar for best actor. I'm going to just take care of that right now. He's out of here. If there was any kind of, you know, dark bone in your body trying to get right back at a guy that just slapped you. And you know what? It'd be, honestly, you could argue, people that argue that Chris Rock deserved what he got, you could argue if Will Smith was taken out in handcuffs or escorted out so he couldn't accept his award, some people could say he deserved that.
Yeah, you know? For sure, yeah. So. I think it was, if it was Billy Crystal that made the joke, right? Yeah. This is somebody that's always up there on the Oscars, right?
Sure, right.
It might have been different.
Sure.
I think Chris Rock knows who he is and what his profession is, right, and what he does.
Right.
And so there's going to be times where people don't like what he says.
Right.
But if it's a scripted, somebody from the Oscars put this together, and then, you know, Billy Crystal or somebody else that's just random says it.
Yeah.
That's not a comedian, right?
Right.
I think they probably would have had a different.
Well, Billy Crystal is a comedian.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's not like a.
His whole start was he's a comedian.
Yeah.
Billy Crystal is a comedian,
but,
/ actor.
Yeah. I mean, but most of what he's done lately is he's not.
Well, he hasn't done nothing.
He's not a stand-up comedian right now. Is what
not
I'm
right
saying.
Now, like, but and, that's
and
how he got
even
to start.
Back then, you know. But yeah, I mean, way back, yeah,
right.
I've never seen any of his specials or anything, but I'll.
Yeah, very funny guy.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Guy. Definitely funny, for sure.
A lot of impersonations, but yeah, he got started stand up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is interesting how it all played out. And Chris Rock basically was like, he was the one that kind of helped keep Will Smith there, which is kind of being big of him, because a lot of people would say, I'm going to take care of that guy who just slapped me.
I mean, there's still people like the hosts, like Wanda Sykes and Amy Schumer, and they're like, that was sickening. I don't need to see this, that kind of stuff ever again. Jim Carrey said, if that was me, there's a lawsuit.
He criticized Hollywood too.
But now, you know, we find out Chris Rock said, let's not make it a bigger deal. That's kind of cool to me.
I think it's very cool that Chris Rock took that route, because
might have been different if it was a full blown punch, like you've said.
You know how it would be different? Right. He would have been going to the emergency room, because I don't think Chris Rock would have got right back up on that one right away. And I think if that happened, you'd have had people flying towards Will Smith if Chris Rock got knocked the bleep out.
Yeah.
So luckily he didn't. And like I said, a few years from now, we're going to find out we're the biggest dopes in the world, because it's the greatest ruse in the history of Hollywood.
They pulled April Fool's joke a week early.
Yeah. There you go. Right. Yeah. That'd be a heck of a... Kudos to people that pulled that off. Okay, so... local sports, Dusty, we'll throw it to you for that, and then we'll preview the Final Four, and we'll hear from Bill Self and Brian Haney, and we'll get to K-State as they have a star player entering transfer portal. Then we'll talk some Royals and hear from Zach Greinke, which he has an unbelievable soundbite only Zach Greinke can put out there. And then if we have time, we'll talk a little NFL free agency.
Yeah, lacrosse track and field meet yesterday for the Osborne Bulldogs. The boys took first place, 93 points, just 1 point ahead of Plainville in second. The Osborne girls finished in fourth. A good start for the Bulldogs and Lady Dogs track and field teams there yesterday. Osborne's 4x8 girls team took a gold medal. The team of Trinity Looters, Gracie Reiner, Addison Poor, and Taylor Elson. Also, Gracie Reiner won the javelin gold medal. On the boys' side, Mason Schur took gold in the 100 and 200 meter dashes, and also the 4x100 meter relay team, which includes Schur as well as Hunter Howell, Dayton Lance, and Ryland Klein-Hacker took first. So you can find the full results for the lacrosse invitational there at ncksports.com. More teams will be opening up their track and field seasons today, including the Beloit Trojans, as they were supposed to start yesterday in Belleville, but that meet was postponed, and that was moved to today. The Trojans compete in the Buff Invite along with Concordia, Minneapolis, Smoky Valley, and Republic County, starting at 3:30 this afternoon. A few other area teams will be getting started today in track and field at the St. John's, Rock Hills, and Lincoln will compete in the Bennington Invitational this afternoon beginning at 3 o'clock. Those schools all have a great group of athletes that returned looking to have success in 2022. Again, that's at 3:30 this afternoon, or 3 o'clock this afternoon. They'll get started in Bennington with that track and field invitational, and we're going to hear from the coach of the Blue Jays here momentarily, Roger Mick, but before we do that, we do want to tell you there's also baseball today for the Beloit Trojans here coming up as the Trojans take on Ellsworth. First NCAA league games for Beloit here this afternoon. Trojans are 2-0 and the Bearcats 1-1. First pitch for game one of that doubleheader at 4 o'clock, and fans can watch the games on the online video stream with the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com. So that's the schedule for today. Again, all the results are always posted when we get them and if we get them at ncksports.com as well for spring sports here in North Central Kansas. So that's the schedule today. Again, track and field for St. John's as they open out their season today at the Bennington Invitational. We had a chance to catch up with their first-year head coach, Roger Mick, here on KD Country 94.
And welcome back on the Sports Ticket here on KD Country 94 as we're joined now by Roger Mick, the head coach of the St. John's track and field teams. Coach, I know you're getting set for the Bennington Invitational here today and getting rolling for that, but kind of looking at how things have gone so far for you as a new head coach and taking over a team that does have a couple state placers from last year and Jane Letourneau in the distance runs on the girls' side of Ben Thompson in the long jump. Got seventh place last year as well at state and obviously some state qualifying and some relays and things like that. So you do have some experience and talent coming back and obviously more than just those kids, but how have things gone for you so far in your first year as the head coach there?
Well, things are going pretty good so far. We are kind of a young team. We only have three seniors and they're all boys. And one of those is Logan Brummer, who's coming back from a very significant knee injury that he suffered during football season. So Logan's really coming along pretty slowly. Our other two senior boys, though, are Ben Thompson and Jared Iceman. And, of course, both of those young men are very good athletes. And as you mentioned, Ben was a state qualifier last year. And we look for both of those guys to – they'll have the opportunity to score quite a few points for us. We look for them to be competitive, you know, every meet they're in. So we do have – only three, but you know they're good ones. And then we're pretty young. We got I think six or seven freshmen, and then quite a few juniors. So, but the kids have been working hard. The weather has been so-so. You know, for Kansas, you never know what you're going to get. But yeah, it's we're off to a good start, and we're looking forward to getting out to Bennington and see what we can do.
You talk about the youth and just kind of looking at that, what do you expect maybe from some of those younger kids and the development that you've seen so far from them here this year?
Some of those younger kids, we're real heavy with the distance runners with the younger kids, and we look for some of those kids to compete. You know, certainly Jonas Letourneau, he's just a freshman, but he had a really good season in cross country. Mm-hmm. He's a kid that could be very competitive. Nicholas Niewald, Henry Holdren, those two freshmen also competed very well in the cross-country season, so we look for them to do pretty well. We got a freshman girl, Sophia Thompson, Ben's younger sister. We look for her to be very competitive in the high jump. She had a lot of success in middle school with that, and I know she's been working real hard with that. So we've got some younger kids that can be competitive and do some good things for us.
The group seemed pretty excited to get things started at Bennington.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Anytime you can, you know, put the weeks of practice behind you and actually get out there and do something on the track or on the field, you know, competitively against somebody else, that's always exciting, and I think they're ready to go.
Roger McNew, head coach of the St. John's track and field team. Coach, we certainly thank you for taking some time. We'll keep track of how things are going throughout the year, and best of luck as you open out the season today.
Thanks, Dusty. Appreciate it.
All right, so there's a look at some local sports here for today. Busy schedule, and once again, for the latest local sports information, visit ncksports.com. All right, the Final Four is this weekend. It is KU, the Jayhawks, the number one seed left in the tournament against number two seed Villanova. KU 32-6, Villanova 30-7. That's the first national semifinal, or as some people might be considering it, the JV game. That's at 5:09 on TBS on Saturday, tomorrow. Pregame at 4:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. Villanova winning titles in 16 and 18. Of course, Kansas has titles and tons of Final Four appearances. And, of course, the all-time winning program in college men's basketball history, surpassing Kentucky. The nightcap is the varsity game, according to some. That is Duke 32-6 against North Carolina 28-9. North Carolina's an 8 seed. Duke's a 2 seed. They'll play at approximately 7:49. More than likely, they won't. It'll be later than that, I would imagine. And, of course, a lot of people are talking about that, and honestly, KU is more than happy. At least Bill Self and others have talked about it. Brian Heenan, the voice of Jayhawks, talked about it yesterday. Okay to fly under the radar. It's worked so far for the Kansas Jayhawks in their 16th Final Four in school history. Bill Self, when asked to compare KU and Nova in their programs,
I don't know if he's doing things differently, but you know, everyone should applaud what they built there. And of course, Jay's the ringmaster of that, and how they develop their guys and how sound and fundamental, and you know, you got to beat them. They don't beat themselves. I do think there's a culture there that exists that would be at the very top of what our profession has. I'll say this too, our culture's right there too. Sometimes people you know, when you look at our situation, you know, we had Josh, who was a one and done. I guess Wiggs and Joe were one and done's were the last three we had, and that's going back to 2014. So we've had one since 2014. We've done it with older kids too. You know, we've done it with the Frank Masons and the Devontae Grahams and the Malik Newmans and Landon Lucases, and certainly the Ochai Abajis, the Christian Browns, the David McCormicks. I mean, we've had very comparable success with, you know, older guys. But I will say this, they've got two championships in the last, what, 6 years or whatever it's been. So, you know, they've knocked us out when we had a great team in the Elite Eight. And then, of course, they beat us up pretty good in San Antonio in 18. So I do think it speaks volumes to how good their program is and how they do things. But I would like to hang our hat on comparable things, because one thing about it, Nova or Kansas, you know, when kids wake up in the morning, they're thinking about ways to get better and how they can make this program better and how they can make this team better. I think that probably exists at both places.
This will be an interesting game because, first of all, it's being overlooked by a lot because of Coach K's final run as head coach at Duke. Also, on top of that, North Carolina playing Duke for the first time in NCAA tournament history, and they meet in the Final Four. And Carolina waxed Duke in Coach K's final game at Cameron Indoor. And I mean, it's a bitter rivalry between the two. Only 8 miles separate their campuses. So we understand all that, and that'll be the marquee game at night. And normally, KU Villanova would be a marquee game. It would be top of the line billing, but instead, it's not. And so I think this is a Brian Haney talked about it yesterday, and Brian, the voice of Jayhawks, with us every single Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency, that this is really the perfect setup for the Jayhawks at the Superdome in New Orleans. And KU's been to New Orleans before in the Final Four. 2003 lost in the title game. 2012 lost in the title game. 2022, boy, you really, KU fans are sitting there go, please, whatever we do, don't lose to Duke and let Coach K have a championship against us for the second time head-to-head like they did in 91, which, oddly enough, think about the karma, if you believe in karma or bookends. If you watch a Seinfeld episode, you understand the bookend part. Coach K's first national championship, who did he beat?
Kansas.
1991. Yeah. Now he could be beating Kansas for his last championship. That'd be a bookend. Yeah. You know, KU would love to ruin that party. Now, I'm okay with just Carolina ruining a party after KU beats Villanova. That's the ultimate thing for me. And I will tell you this. This sounds really weird to say, maybe, because if you make a national championship game, you don't want to lose to anybody. But if you have to lose, who would you rather lose to, Carolina or Duke? I'm going to tell you, a lot of KU fans will tell you, I'd rather lose to Carolina than Duke. There are a ton of KU fans that despise Duke. I mean, hate Duke. And I am one of those people. And it goes back to 1986 when KU had an outstanding team. And I was 10 years old, but I remember this. KU donned the all-red uniforms, which was a huge, huge mistake. Because we know the color uniform you wear affects how you play. Who was it? Archie Marshall got hurt prior to that game. And it was a Final Four. And that was the first time. And that's really when Duke first came on the national stage, was 86. And Duke knocked off Kansas. And I, forever since then, have hated him. I absolutely, and I hate's a strong word, but yeah, I think it's true. And so then Duke then lost to Louisville, and Purvis Ellison and Denny Crum, the head coach, after that. And then, of course, Kansas played Duke in the Final Four back in, or after that, in 88. And KU was the underdog, as they were against anybody in 88, Danny and the Miracles at Kemper, and KU beat Duke. So KU and Duke played in the Final Four twice in 3 years. Duke won the first one, KU won the second, both went on to national championships. But they have not met in the Final Four since then. Now, they've met in the tournament a few times. KU's lost to Duke in the second round 1 year when KU was 8 seed under Roy Williams. KU beat Duke another time out west when Duke was like a 4 seed in a Sweet 16 1 year. KU was a 1 seed, if I remember correctly, or a 2, with Nick Carlson and Kirk Heinrich. And then there was recently, a few years ago, when Kansas knocked off Duke in a classic in Omaha, that went to overtime, and Steve Mikhailuk hit the big three-pointer, of course, and Malik Newman had a huge game, and KU was just happy to be at the Final Four and then got their doors blown off by Villanova, as I saw in person. And like 5 minutes in the game, it was already over. Villanova was making everything. It was a mismatched nightmare for KU. Yudoka Zabuka couldn't even play. It was just because he couldn't match up with the five guys on the floor for Villanova. So there is a history, no doubt, between KU and Duke, if that's to take place on Monday night in a championship game. There's also a deep, deep history with KU and North Carolina, if they play in the finals on Monday night, because, of course, Dean Smith played at Kansas. Roy Williams was Dean Smith's top right-hand man, who became the head coach at Kansas. Kansas and North Carolina played in national championship games way back in the 50s. Wilt Chamberlain lost that triple overtime game. What was it, 54-53, which is amazing to me that Wilt Chamberlain lost any national championship game with the way he did. Changed the rules because of Wilt Chamberlain. Of course, Kansas has seen North Carolina in the Final Four before. They've beaten them on one occasion, and then, of course, in 93, they lost in the Final Four, and then Dean Smith and North Carolina beat Michigan when Chris Webber infamously called a timeout, and KU lost to them with Rex Walters and others in 93. And 93, was that New Orleans, too? I almost want to think that was in New Orleans as well, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, that one I can't remember.
We could always look that one up. But, yeah. But so there's a history between KU and North Carolina. There's a history between KU and Duke, no doubt. And KU and North Carolina crosses over in regards to coaches and Dean Smith and Roy Williams and everything else. And there's Kansas and Duke, and that's, we've kind of had that ever since 1986 when Duke came onto the scene nationally.
That was New Orleans in 93.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. So Kansas has a history of getting to the Final Four. Like, if the Final Four is in New Orleans, you better go ahead and go to Vegas and bet KU to make it. But KU doesn't win it in New Orleans, obviously. They're 0-3.
Obviously.
So then you move over to the team they're going to play coming tomorrow. And there's a history with KU Villanova, more so than KU and Duke and KU North Carolina in the last 10 to 15 years. They've played 8 times. They've played an NCAA tournament 3 times. And KU is 3-5 with Bill Self as a coach against Jay Wright. KU's 3-5. And just a few years ago, when KU had that team, they ended up being number one and didn't get to play in the tournament because of COVID. KU was ranked first. Villanova was 18th. I remember being worried about that game because I knew Villanova was going to slow it down and that was going to be a tough out. And KU lost in the final seconds by 1, 56-55. And Villanova wasn't even close to as good of a team that year. I don't think people think Villanova's as close to KU right now, being shorthanded with the injury to Justin Moore. That's why this game scares the you-know-what out of me the closer we get to it. But Villanova, they beat KU beat them in the Sweet 16 back in, what was it, 08, when they won it all? I don't remember for sure. But then, of course, Villanova beat KU in the Elite Eight in 16, went on to win it all. 2018, Villanova beat KU in the Final Four, went on to win it all. And Villanova's sitting here going, yeah, this is perfect. For us to win a national championship, all we got to do is beat Kansas, and we know we're going to win it all. So it is amazing how these things crisscross over. There is a history between, and in Villanova, North Carolina, played in one of the greatest national championship games you'll ever see when Chris Jenkins hit the three at the buzzer to win the championship. You can't have a more exciting finish unless Gordon Hayward would have hit the half-court shot against Duke, which was, I was there for that one, and got, I was behind the backboard higher up, and I thought it was going in. I was like, oh.
Everybody thought it was going in, no matter what their vantage point was.
I was so excited. Yeah. The thought crossed my mind. I'm like, oh, yes, Coach K had his guy miss a free throw on purpose, and that was a huge mistake, and I was elated, and then it just didn't quite go in. But that was one of the most exciting endings to a game you'll ever see, was Villanova, North Carolina. Villanova, Duke don't really have as much of a deep history playing in the tournament that I recall. So you've got four teams that are blue in color. You got four outstanding coaches. Herbert Davis, I know, is a first-year coach, but he's learned under Roy Williams, and he's a North Carolina alum. You know, Coach K, we know most people say he's the greatest coach of all time, him and John Wooden. Bill Self's maybe the best regular season coach, no doubt, in the modern era he is. No worse than a four seed. Coach K's had teams that have been 8-9 seeds, and he's got, I think one year he didn't make the tournament. Kentucky's had great seeds, but they've had years they didn't make the tournament. And Duke's lost to a 15 in the first round with Coach K, and so is John Calipari. Bill Self's never lost as a 2 or a 1. So there's so much, a little bit of history between all these schools. But when we focus on Villanova and Kansas, Kansas is favored to win this game. I think the last the line was 4.5. There are a couple of huge keys in this game for me. One, well, first of all, play loose. That's important. Don't play tight. But one is KU to be a front runner in this game. You know, if they are, or that, if they're down at the first or second media timeout a little bit, no big deal. But if Kansas is down 6 at halftime to Villanova, as they were against Miami of Florida, I think KU fans better be very, very worried, because you're going to have limited possessions in the second half. If it's 35-29 coming up tomorrow between Villanova and Kansas is down, or if it's 29-23, something like that, that means Villanova's controlling the tempo. It means Kansas isn't making probably outside shots. And maybe it means KU's a little bit tight. And it means Villanova has gained confidence and knows they can beat KU even though they're shorthanded without their second-best player who ruptured his Achilles in the Elite Eight. To me, the key for Kansas tomorrow night, it sounds very simple, and sometimes we overanalyze everything. To me, it's very simple. For Kansas to not sweat things too much tomorrow. And I know you could say, well, that's true of any game, Wade, but really more so in this game. Villanova will squeeze the life out of the ball. Villanova will play a low-scoring game. They're happy with it. They want to muck it up. They want to grind it out, and they don't want KU to get out in transition. And if KU has to play in a half-court setting almost all the time, and they can score in the half-court, but they're going to take more time to score. Villanova's a very good defensive team. Limited possessions. And when you're an underdog, what do you want? When you're an underdog, almost always you want less possessions.
Yeah.
Because the more possessions, the team that's more talented's got a better chance to do things to you with more possessions. So it's like, you know, we talk about all the time in NFL. What's the best way to beat a great offense? Keep them on the sideline. Bill Snyder was a king at that. Ball control, good special teams, ball control, limit the snaps and possessions for the other team. And he was pretty successful doing it. And teams kind of tried to do that against the Chiefs, weren't overly successful, but it's happened to Peyton Manning back in the day and so forth and so on. And this is the same thing. To me, tomorrow, the biggest key to this is KU being able to get out in transition and tempo. And if Villanova can muck it up, and they don't turn the ball over a lot, and if Villanova has a 6-point lead at halftime, and they're not turning the ball over, and KU can't get those easy baskets or fast break opportunities, then Kansas is going to have to play better than they normally do in the half court. They have less possession, so they got to really take care of the ball themselves, because they sometimes have a tendency to turn over. And then the ultimate thing is free throws. Villanova shoots over 80%. Another reason why you don't want to get behind. Another thing that's a key in this game, don't get in the bonus early. If you're Kansas and Villanova goes to the line with a 1-1 opportunity with 10 minutes to go in the first or second half, that's trouble. Because if you're Villanova, you know what? Yes. You know what you do when you're Villanova? You drive it every time. You drive it, and you'll see if you get a call. Maybe you'll have get a charge or two. You drive it. You get in the bonus. You drive it. You drive it. You drive it. Because you got guys that make 80% of your free throws. And Kansas can't defend the foul line, obviously. So those are some concerns that I have with this game. And one of the concerns Bill Self has, in Kansas, against Miami of Florida, we saw multiple times. In the first half, KU had problems with this. Going for ball fakes. going for pump fakes and ball fakes and getting up in the air. And Bill Self, like, chastised his team during one timeout, saying, guys, stay on the floor. Don't be jumping for every single pump fake. Well, Villanova's very good at doing
Villanova
that.
Villanova special right there.
And here's Bill Self on defending that.
It's really impressive how they do it because, you know, they shoot 83% from the line. So I think that's an all-time NCAA potential record for a season. So big part of their offense is getting fouled. So and they shoot a ton of threes. I think like 46% of their shots are threes. So that's a ridiculously high number. So what they're so good at is keeping everybody away from the middle, you know, obviously because they can shoot and then guys dribbling in there and being able to play off 2 feet. And then they're all good post players. They all have individual moves. And what makes it difficult is you have guys playing post defense that aren't used to playing post defense. And then, you know, you have guys that think that they can block a shot and that we'd be better off if they just stay on the floor. And so it does take a disciplined player to stay down.
And that, of course, is always a wild card, is three-point shooting. You know, Villanova should have lost to Houston. Houston was 1 of 20 from 3, and I counted at least 10 wide-open threes. They weren't. That wasn't great defense. They were wide open. Now, if Kansas gets those looks, they're going to have to knock them down. And if you believe in karma, and Brian Haney was talking yesterday, he goes, you know, it's almost like this is lined up perfectly for Kansas as a payback in a good way for not getting to play in the tournament. We would have been overall number one seed in 2020. And that's kind of what he believes. Well, we'll see. If they're cutting down the nets Monday, we can say that's true. But if you really believe in karma, Villanova tomorrow is going to go 1 of 20 from 3. Because they were 20 of 22 in San Antonio. Okay, it wasn't that good. But dear Lord, I think they made almost every three in the first half in San Antonio. Where it didn't matter what Kansas did. They were putting up guarded
threes.
I think
they only did miss one three in the first half.
I think so. It was insane.
I could be wrong about that.
But I'm pretty sure they made like 19 threes in the game. It was insane. I thought they'd calm down, cool down, and I was dead wrong in the second half. So that's always an X factor. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, was with us yesterday, and his thoughts on facing Villanova. He, too, has his concerns.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to worry about. And the defense in particular, they're going to try to muck up this game.
Yep.
They're going to try to do whatever they can to get back in transition D and slow KU's grab-it-and-go approach. I mean, Kansas is as good a transition offensive team as there is in the country. And you heard Jim Larrañaga talk about it from Miami. He said they're the best five-second layup team in the country. And what he meant by that was, whether it's a make or a miss on the other end, they're at the rim within 5 seconds coming back the other way. And Villanova's got some athletes that can run and get back, and they can do some things to try to, you know, jam up the works on what KU would like to do in dribble penetration and getting it downhill, getting those driving lanes when the ball reverses to the second side. They're really fundamentally sound. But Moore was a big part of that. And so it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like without him. I also think that based on their lack of depth, Kansas can run them into the ground a bit. You saw that with Miami in the second half, where there's a reason why they were outscored 47-15 and only scored 15 points in 20 minutes. Everything was coming up short. If you go back and look at their misses, they had no legs under their shots because Kansas had the pedal to the metal, and eventually the dam broke and they just ran out of gas. And so I hope that's the case for Kansas, and I hope it's similar to what you said, where there's not a 7 to 10 point deficit, because then Villanova can try to take the air out of the ball, and you know you don't want to get in a free throw shooting contest with a club that shoots north of 80%.
Well, so those are the thoughts of Brian Haney, voice of the Jayhawks. He went on the CS Day during that interview, which you can go listen to on our podcast page, Sports Ticket Podcast at katycountry94.com. He said that he thinks KU is going to win 8 to 10 point range. That was his thought, that they eventually wear down Villanova. So we told you about the concerns that you should have as a KU fan dealing with Villanova. Now, what are the advantages? Well, first of all, KU has a deeper bench than Villanova, although really KU is only playing 7 guys, Remy Martin and Mitch Lightfoot. Now, maybe a KJ Adams comes in for a stop like we saw in the Elite Eight against Miami of Florida. If they get in foul trouble, you got Yusefu, you got a few. McClements maybe can come in as a freshman, do something. You got Jalen Coleman-Lands who could come in maybe. So KU's got more depth. They don't really play more than 7 right now, but they do have more depth. Villanova is very, very light in depth. They were before Justin Moore ruptured his Achilles. The other thing, too, is Justin Moore was their best perimeter defender. So who's going to defend Ochai Agbaji? Now, that's a question mark for Villanova.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, too, is who's going to defend Remy Martin? Because we know the energy he brings off the bench. I think the fascinating part of this matchup is how does Villanova match up with David McCormick if McCormick's playing well. On the flip side, how does McCormick match up with Villanova spacing the floor? Because it did not go well when Udoka tried to do that against Villanova in 2018. No. Dusty looked it up. Villanova made 18 out of 43s in that Final Four game. That's almost 50%, and that's a high volume. And we don't know what they did in the first half, but trust me, it was better than 50% in the first half.
Yeah, it was.
And so it is interesting. Another advantage I think KU has in this game, too, is that, like Brian talked about, if you can get up and down a little bit, you can get them tired, perhaps. And then if and they rely on the three-point shot, which is always scary. But if they're tired and you can run some, and then they don't get to rotate many guys off the bench, and yes, there's media timeouts to regain your composure, but then perhaps those three-point shots are going to be short, like we saw against Miami of Florida. I will tell you this. Villanova is not going to panic when they get down 10. If Villanova gets down 10, they're not going to panic like Miami of Florida did. Two, Villanova is not going to just keep jacking threes and not try to attack the goal, which Miami of Florida basically just flat-out panicked. And they're an extremely well-coached team with Jay Wright. They got a few guys on this team that have been a part of Final Four teams, like Gillespie, who is a gamer. And so there's reason to be concerned about this. There's some KU fans going, listen, we're going to be there Monday night in the national title game. Well, you should be. You should be. I mean, you're the one seed. Villanova's a two. You should beat Villanova. They're shorthanded. Absolutely, KU should be there Monday night. Doesn't mean they will be.
No, absolutely not. There's a lot of teams that should be there that should have been there. Well, right?
Kentucky could say they should be there.
At the top of the list, right?
Gonzaga, yeah. Arizona. I mean,
they lose to Wisconsin, and they're not there, right? And then Duke wins a championship. Thanks,
oh, yeah,
Kentucky.
Going back, yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're going back. I'm talking this year. Kentucky, Arizona, Gonzaga could all be there, and they're not there. So they didn't make it and win at all. Why is KU automatic going to win it? Because there's only one seed left.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the top of the list for teams that can claim we should have been there. We didn't get there, right?
And UNLV, they're undefeated. Beat by Duke in the Final Four.
At least, and you can go back and see other teams that are right behind them there that have done the same things they did, went undefeated but didn't make it, you know. And you know, obviously going to the tournament, you can say that about some undefeated teams. But it's, I mean, you got to go out and play, and you got to stay focused on what you're doing and go out and execute the way you need to. And, I mean, it's pretty obvious. I didn't watch a lot of college basketball this year, to be honest. I watched a lot of Big 12, so I watched more KU, obviously, than I did Villanova. Mm-hmm. But just watching the tournament, it's pretty obvious that these are two very contrasting styles.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's obvious that if KU wants to win this game, they're going to have to control the tempo and be able to play at least at a pace where they can get up and down the floor at times during the game. They can't just sit here and play a half-court game the whole time. So that's going to be an issue for KU is trying to figure out how do we do that. How do we? And then again, you talk about Villanova getting tired. Well, if you do the things that Coach Self is telling you not to do against Miami, jumping on ball fakes, things like this, get into foul trouble, that limits your bench too.
That's right.
And gets your guys tired, even if you do try to run, right? And then Villanova has that much better chance to just drag this thing out and give themselves an opportunity to win this game. You never just sit here and say, you know, just because this guy is hurt or we're better than this team, so we're just going to go out and win this. I mean, you've got to go play, and this is the time of the year where you got to have a different focus going into it, or else you'll be bounced and won't get to the dream that you're just that close to.
I'll tell you one thing that really stands out to me is that I really liked. Even in the first half, when they were down 6 against Miami, Florida, I've seen KU teams over the years with Bill Self who played super tight as one seeds are the favorite. They play tight, 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 tight. They played loose in that game. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to play loose, even though they're the one seed, but really they're under the radar again. I think that helps them. They're going to play, I think I'm going to play pretty loose tomorrow, and I think that's a good thing.
I think if Kansas does win, I think you're going to see two spurts, one in the first half, one in the second, where they score 6, 7, 8 points in a row really quickly. Mm-hmm. Do that again, maybe to keep control of the game or get control of the game in the first half. And then maybe kind of that 8-minute mark, maybe not quite a knockout blow, but really to keep that distance between the two teams.
Have some breathing room.
Yep.
Yeah. The other thing, too, I want to mention before we get into the Carolina Duke game and then other stuff. KU has the only first-team All-American that's left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now Banchero's a very good player, but he's a freshman. KU has, when you look at these four teams, KU has the most experience. Now, I mean, Gillespie has experience, don't get me wrong, Villanova. Duke is a very young team.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina's got some experience. You know, Manic has been a great addition to them, but they're younger guards who have been fantastic in this tournament. And then, of course, Baycott's been a beast. So Carolina's a loaded team. And I think a lot of people automatically just picking Duke to win that game. And I don't know. We shall see. But two of the biggest advantages KU has against the entire field that's left is experience. They're older. And they have, honestly, they have two guys, but Remy would have been healthy all year. He might have been All-American. He was preseason Big 12 Player of the Year. He's playing like All-American in the tournament. But Ochai Agbaji, I want to focus on him for a second. If Kansas is going to cut down the nets on Monday night, Ochai Agbaji is going to have a great game in one of these two. Whether it's tomorrow, KU, he scores 10, and Remy scores 15, and McCormick scores 12, and Brown scores 12, and KU's fine, and they win 63-58, whatever. They skirt by, they get by. Monday night against Duke of Carolina, Ochai is going to have a big game, and here's why. When you play Duke of Carolina, it's going to be a high-scoring game. It's going to be up and down. You're going to have some shots. You're going to have open shots, and you hope you don't play tight. And Ochai maybe rediscovered his stroke in the second half against Miami of Florida. He needs to be a little bit more aggressive, as the announcers mentioned. I think they're dead on. Reggie Miller was all over it. You're supposed to be – you are All-American. You're not supposed to be. You are. You should be a lottery pick. You should be. Mm-hmm. Definitely first-round pick. Should be a lottery pick. Ochai Agbaji either tomorrow – or if they win tomorrow or Monday, okay, he's got to have. I think for KU to cut the nets down on Monday, yeah, Remy might be good in both games, but I don't think you can count on Remy to score 20 or more in both of these. And maybe he will, and I don't think you can count on McCormick to put up a double double in each of these games, which he might. And I don't think you can count on Christian Brown to have this big game offensively because he's a little hesitant to shoot the three. If you've noticed, he always wants to pump fake and drive it. I think Ochai Agbaji is going to have to play like an All American in at least one of the next two games for KU to win it all. I mean, he's going to have a game where he scores 25, he's efficient, whatever the case may be. He's going to have a spurt, like you just talked about, where he drills a couple of threes, a couple of daggers, or whatever it might be, a steal and a dunk, because his defense has been pretty good in this tournament. Everybody talks about how his average is down. Yeah, but his defense has been pretty doggone good. But I still think Ochai's going to have to play like a star, at least in one of these two games.
Everything he's done all around defensively has really kept KU in some games and helped them win them.
Right?
I made that joke when Kevin Harlan said KU has 4 blocks already in this game. I said, how's that possible when Ochai has 20?
It seemed like it.
Like, I mean, he would seem like he was blocking everything that was coming inside.
And he didn't have many blocks this year.
No, and he's not. And that's what, because it was funny because you talked about that on the show in the morning. Like, KU doesn't have that rim protector like they usually do.
Yeah.
And then Och, and then McCormick, and then Mitch Lightfoot is just blocking everything that's coming to the basket from Providence. And I'm like, so much for not having a rim protector.
They hadn't done
it all year.
I
know they hadn't. They hadn't done it for a while since Doak was there, really, to have anybody that even had a semblance. And Doak wasn't like Cole Aldrich or Jeff Withey or anything like that.
No.
So, but it was just funny. And I mean, it's like that. That's what, I mean, honestly, the offense just blew up in the second half against Miami, no doubt. But
and they got
defense
tired.
Is
they got
really gassed. What's gotten them to that point, to the Elite Eight. I mean, obviously you have to have those spurts that Jason was talking about and that you always see with KU in a tournament game when they win. There's at least one spot where they just, see you later, we're done. And, that came obviously early in the second half against Miami. But, they really have gotten to where they're at by playing tough defense and being sound on that into the floor.
If they continue to play at the level they have defensively, then they can, obviously they could compensate maybe where Ochai has an off night. One of the things I keep hearing from multiple KU fans is, man, if we play like we did the second half against Miami, well, duh. I mean, you outscored them by 32. Let me tell you something. I'm going to go out on a huge limb here. It's very sturdy and it's not going to break. KU's not going to have another half like that, let alone tomorrow or Monday. That won't happen for probably another decade in the tournament. That may never happen again.
Yeah,
47-15 in an Elite Eight game in a half is insane. And they're never going to play a half like that again, I don't think, against a really good team. Now, will they have a 47-15 half against a 16 seed or a second-round game? Possibly. But they're not going to. Like, I hear that. Well, if they play like they did the second half against Miami, well, yeah, of course. They're going to beat Villanova by 20, and they're going to beat Duke of Carolina by double digits. Absolutely. But do you think they're going to outscore Villanova by 32 in one of the halves tomorrow?
No.
Do you think Villanova's just going to chuck threes and run out of gas? Even if they're short on depth, they're not going to run out of gas like Miami of Florida did. And the other thing, too, is Miami, Florida had short time to prep for KU.
KU had a short time to prep for Miami. Jay Wright's had a full week to prepare for KU, you know? And then Duke and Carolina on Monday night, that's going to be a track meet that's going to be up and down. And you know, those two teams are too good offensively to go in a complete funk and score 15 and a half. So, yes, if KU plays like they did the second half against Miami, Florida, I agree with everyone. Yeah, they're going to be cutting down the nets on Monday. And KU fans, you're not going to have to sweat anything. Because, well, if that team could put a whole game together like that, well, yeah, they win by 100. But that is not going to happen. Because as you go further in the tournament, and remember, Miami was a 10 seed, although I think they're a really good team for a 10 seed, no doubt, and they play good competition. But when you go further in the tournament, now you get to the Final Four, every one of these teams is capable of putting together a great half like Kansas did. And you want to go back, 2008, when Bill Self won his only title at KU, that was the greatest half of basketball for KU. Carolina, that 40-12. That was a better half than Miami of Florida. Because, in my opinion, because of the stakes, it was a Final Four. It was a 1 versus a 1. You know, you're a 1 against a 10. You should beat them, right? Mm. A 1 versus a 1. They had the player of the year, and Cole Aldrich schooled him, and Cole Aldrich didn't even play a lot that year. He was deep on the bench. And KU was up 40-12, and it was a laugher. And Billy Packer said the game was over 10 minutes into the game. That was the greatest half KU's played that I've seen in the NCAA tournament. And, of course, then they let him back in the game and then put the foot on the gas. And then, of course, they did not play near – they played not – they didn't play anything close offensively against Memphis as they did against Carolina because Memphis was a much better defensive team. And so one thing I will say, Kansas, if they beat Villanova, Kansas-North Carolina, Kansas-Duke is going to be a fun up-and-down game that I think KU will welcome with open arms. A lot of people are scared about, oh, God, what do we play? If we play Duke on Monday, I don't want to lose to Coach K. That would be so. I don't want him to go out on top. I get that. But in regards to the matchups and the pace of play and how KU likes to play, the scarier game is tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say like you could, when you said that, you know, they're not gonna outscore Villanova by 32 in either one of these halves. You can make a better argument that they might not even score 32 on their own
in either
one of these halves.
I
right?
agree.
If Villanova plays the way that they want to play, they might not even get to 32 by themselves in either one of the halves.
I agree with you.
And so, let alone outscore them by 32. It's a totally different game, but you've got to try to control that tempo as much as you can.
Well, think about why Kansas got out to those runs in the second against Miami of Florida. What caused it? Their defense and Miami made some bad turnovers, and it was easy buckets. We talk about the difference between live ball and dead ball turnovers. It's a huge difference. Miami had a lot of live ball turnovers, and then KU got the energy, and the place was rocking, and Villanova's not going to make those stupid plays. They might make one here and there. They're not going to make the rash of mistakes that Miami of Florida did. So you can't count on that tomorrow at all. And you're right. I don't even know if either team's going to hit 60 as a whole in the game, which favors Villanova. And the last time KU and Villanova played, and KU clearly was the better team, but it was in Philadelphia. I should point that out. Villanova won 56-55. I can see a game tomorrow being in the mid to upper 50s. And if it is, or even lower 60s, it's advantage Villanova.
Yeah.
And I think KU's going to be hard-pressed to get north of 70. But when KU plays Carolina or Duke, I'd be shocked if anybody scores less than 70 or 75. And I can't wait if that's the matchup. I mean, KU-Duke or KU-North Carolina on Monday, it's going to be absolutely up and down and fun. You're going to see so much athleticism. Whereas when you play Villanova, they're in a way, when you're the underdog and you're shorthanded, you want to take away the athletic part of the game. And how can you do that? Once again, less possessions, less driving to the bucket, less turnovers means less fast break opportunities, and that's why this game, to me, if I'm a KU fan, I'm more worried about tomorrow than I am Monday, which you should be because this is the first game. If you don't win, you don't go to Monday anyway.
Yeah,
right.
And I'd love to see Monday Carolina-Kansas would be a just absolute track meet.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because with either North Carolina or Duke, it's almost like you get an extra 8 to 10 minutes on the game.
Yes.
Even if you're down 10 at the 10-minute mark.
Right.
You still have those 10 minutes. And in an up-and-down game, Kansas has that ability to make that up.
Sure.
But if it's a Villanova
and
it's at the 10-minute mark and you're down 6 and you're any more, you're in a lot of trouble. But if you're down 6, it's almost like you're not going to get that extra 10 minutes of the game.
Right.
That last 10 minutes is just going to grind and squeeze, and there just won't be that many possessions. And it's just, like you said, it's the scary part. It's the scary part. It's just you have to get what you're going to get done in the first 30 minutes of the game, I think, tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Whereas against North Carolina Duke, you're going to have that extra last chance in a high-scoring game.
To add to that point, and then we'll move on to the rest of the show, to add to that point, I think that you know, if Kansas and Duke play, or Kansas North Carolina, if you're down 8 at the 10-minute mark, you're like, we can get a spurt. I mean, we saw Carolina have a 25-point lead and blow that. With Carolina, we saw against Stephen St. Peter's, they're up 30, and it was 20 in 2 minutes. So you can come back on Carolina if you're down double digits. You can make a run and come back because you're going to get plenty of possessions. They're not going to milk the clock. That's not the way they play. Duke's usually up and down as well. So if you get down 10 against Duke with 10 minutes to go, you know, it's not ideal. But, yeah, you can come back because, as you said, if there's more possessions, that feels like there's extra time. And for KU Villanova, you're down 10 to Villanova 10 minutes ago, that's going to feel like 20. Now, on the flip side, if KU's up 10 with 10 minutes ago, it should feel like 20 because Villanova's not a team that scores a lot either. Mm-hmm. And if KU's up 10 against Duke or Carolina, that can be gone in 2 minutes. And we just saw KU against Miami of Florida down 6 and up 4 in like 2.5 minutes in the second half the other day. Kansas has that explosivity offensively. The spurtability, as Clark Kellogg says. Duke has it. Carolina has it. Villanova doesn't. But they're spurtability stoppers, though. They don't usually let a team go on a crazy run.
Those last 10 minutes, I could just see Connor Gillespie running the shot clock down to 6-7.
Hitting the dagger three. Oh, I see it, too.
One step back three. Uh-huh. He's going to get to the line 6 times in the last couple minutes. I do watch the Big East because I follow Creighton. Uh-huh. Oh, I've seen it. Uh-huh. I will be so glad when he's gone. He probably has 6 more years of eligibility left. But he's been there forever. But I will just be so happy he's gone. And you know, because he's a really good player. I mean,
that's all the respect.
He's going to get the calls. He's going to get to the line in the last few minutes. So, like I said, I think Kansas has to get done what they're going to get done in the first 30.
I agree with you. I do. So that's the Final Four. KU Villanova, that's the early game, 5:09 on TBS. If you can watch on TV, go to CBS. I don't know what you're going to see, but it ain't going to be basketball. Mm-hmm. Or you can listen to Z96.3 Lake with a pregame at 4:30 tomorrow. Brian and Greg will have the call for you on the Jayhawk Network. And then Duke and Carolina, the game of the night, according to most. Wouldn't it be crazy if KU Villanova ends up being a classic and then Carolina and Duke ends up being a complete bust? I mean, it's possible. We've seen two games where Carolina got blown out by Duke in Carolina, and Carolina honestly won comfortably at Duke. Although I think this one's going to be a heck of a game. I think it will live up to the hype. I think this game could easily be 85-84 type of thing. Mm-hmm. It might even go overtime. But who do you like here, Duke or Carolina, to win this game?
I like Carolina.
Yeah, Carolina? Yep. All right. I've said, I tried the jinx, and I'm trying it still, is that once Duke made it out, beat Texas Tech, Duke's the favorite to win it all, and so I got Duke. And I hope I'm wrong. Be happy to jinx them.
Yeah, I'm picking Duke. Close game, I'm expecting, obviously, kind of like what you're talking about. They're high-scoring close game, but I'm going to go with Duke.
All right. Villanova, Kansas.
I don't like Duke, but I'm picking Duke.
Kansas and Villanova, who are we picking?
I'm picking KU to win that one.
All right. You got to cover 4.5?
I'll say yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Villanova.
He picked Villanova the other day, so he's going Villanova. I hope he's wrong on both. Well, you had Carolina, Villanova.
Yeah.
Hope you're really wrong on that one. I'm going to, you know, like most people that follow KU, you're going to always worry about the worst things that could possibly happen to you, and Villanova is a scary team because of the history. But on paper, there's no reason why KU shouldn't win this game. And Bill Self has a week to prepare for it. And in 2018, yes, he had a week to prepare, and they got blown out. That Villanova was way better than KU that year, in my opinion. This year, KU is the better team. They're the more athletic team, and they have a week to prepare. I trust in Self on this one, so that's how I'm going to eventually pick KU to win. In Self, you trust. And KU is going to find a way to move on to the championship on Monday, where they're going to play Duke. And then we'll talk about that Monday. Odds are, instead, we'll be talking about Villanova versus Carolina. And if you believe the fix is in, then you know Duke's going to win.
Oh, yeah.
If you believe in the fix. If you believe everything's rigged, like some people do.
I've said I'm a rational person when it comes to officials, except when it comes for Duke games.
Yeah,
and
K-State fans say, except for KU games at Allen Fieldhouse. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, women's hoops, the final four games played tonight. The semifinals feature 3 number one seeds and UConn, who's the 2 seed. 14 straight Final Four for the UConn women. First game of the evening at the Target Center in Minneapolis tonight is South Carolina, the number one overall seed against Louisville at 6. And then Stanford versus UConn, 2-1 seeds at 8:30. Both games on ESPN tonight. The winners move on to the national championship game on Sunday evening. Dusty follows the women's game a little bit more than I do. Who do you – I would think South Carolina versus who? I would assume you're picking South Carolina to win.
Yeah, I'm definitely picking South Carolina. It's such a crapshoot.
Stanford or UConn?
I'm going to say UConn's going to beat them.
Okay, so UConn, South Carolina.
South Carolina, UConn.
All right, who wins the championship?
South Carolina.
Like
okay. No, if South Carolina's playing their ball, nobody touches them.
They're going to win it. Okay.
Yeah.
The Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2022 officially announced that the Final Four will be, but according to, people have leaked out information, apparently. Five former players and coaches already said to be on the list of inductions. One-time K-State coach and current West Virginia head coach Bob Huggins will be joined by player and coach George Karl, as well as players Manu Ginobili, Tim Hardaway, and Swin Cash. And I know Dusty's excited about Manu going into the Hall of Fame.
There were so many people, like, after he retired, is he a Hall of Famer?
Of course,
like, Manu's definitely a Hall of Famer, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Y'all understand this is not the NBA Hall of Fame, right? Mm-hmm. Like, too many people get caught up in that, and I was just like, yeah.
It's the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Mine is a first ballot Hall of Famer because it's the Basketball Hall of Fame.
No doubt.
He is a legend internationally.
Yeah, absolutely. K-State had their fourth player enter the transfer portal yesterday since the season ended, and Jerome Tang was hired as new head coach. Luke Kazabuke, Carlton Lingard, Selton Miguel already have entered the transfer portal. And now the big name is Nigel Pack. Pack, a first-team All-Big 12 pick, announced his intentions to enter the portal yesterday. He also has his name in the NBA draft pool, but hasn't hired an agent, so he could go check it out and then come back like Ochai did and Jalen Wilson did last year. Pack said in a statement on social media, "After much thought and prayer, I've decided to enter into the transfer portal. I want to explore all my options, but K-State will certainly be one of the schools I consider." Pack averaged 17.5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, shot just under 44% from three-point land for K-State this past season, was named the Big 12's most improved player. You know, what really stands out to me is this quote that Pack put out there. The last part of it. "I want to explore all my options, but K-State will certainly be one of the schools I consider." End of quote. You know, we have talked about this, and this is why I think Roy Williams, one of the reasons why he got out when he did, he could have coached longer if he wanted to. He got out. I do strongly believe Coach K, as much as he denies it, this is one of the reasons why he's getting out. That name, image, likeness is going to become a bigger thing. I think why you're seeing some younger coaches being hired at some of these universities. You have to think about who you're going to hire to deal with NIL, but also about recruiting players. And it used to be you recruited players, and once you got them there, yeah, there might be an occasional guy that heads out and sits out a year, but you're going to keep most of the guys, and you're going to build, and you're going to have to find 3 or 4 guys, maybe 5 every year, and you can build it up. Now you have to re-recruit. Not only, you know, you have to recruit players to bring in, obviously, but you also have to re-recruit the guys that are already on your team. And when Nigel Pack says, "I want to explore all my options, but K-State will certainly be one of the schools I consider," that sounds like a free agent saying, "I'm Tyrann Mathieu, and I'm going to explore all my options, but the Chiefs are still a possibility. But more than likely, you ain't going back to where you came from once you enter the portal." And this is very clear. It's basically saying, "I got to be re-recruited by K-State. Like, I'm a free agent now, and I will still consider K-State, but they got some selling to do to me."
Absolutely. And
that's a whole different ballgame in college sports.
It's a different ballgame, but, with coaching changes, it was happening more
sure.
than now just with the free transfer portal, right?
Right?
Like, you get a free year,
right.
You can just play whenever you want one right. time, right? And so there's a little bit of a difference there, and I think that's what it is right now. There's a new coach at K-State, and Nigel Pack wants to explore his opportunities because he was recruited by Bruce Weber
right.
to play for Bruce Weber and not to play for K-State, right?
Right.
How many times do we see that when coaches change? Like, we committed to a coach, not a school, and
exactly.
it's obvious.
Right.
And I mean, that's what it is right now. And so you move on and you move forward. And, a lot of people talk bad about that transfer portal, but imagine if you're just a kid going to college, right? I've seen it multiple times where somebody goes to KU or K-State, doesn't work out, they go to Fort Hayes.
Yeah.
They're not restricted by anybody saying that they can't go to Fort Hayes now, right?
Right.
And or wherever they want to
go. In your own conference,
yeah.
Now. See Bryce Thompson.
And so that's the thing for me is like, what makes a college athlete different than a college student?
Mm-hmm.
If you're really talking about the student part should come first if it's a student
right.
athlete, right?
Right.
Now, these kids aren't transferring because they want a different education.
No.
They want to go play for a different basketball program. But it's the same concept. It's like if they're not happy where they're at, they can go somewhere else. And I don't have a major problem with it. I mean, everybody's talking about how many people are in the transfer portal. And it's ridiculous,
it
the number that's in there, football and basketball.
But it's all right.
But again, it's just like, if I'm not happy where I'm at, I can go somewhere else at that age.
Well, when you think about it in real life, I mean, jobs, yeah. you have the freedom to go unless you're signed a contract and you usually can get out of it anyway. So, yeah, I think people overreact when they see so many people.
But, yeah, it doesn't look good that Nigel Paxton come back to K-State if he puts his name in the transfer portal. But, I mean,
it used to be the rule you had to sit out a year. Yeah. And if you sat out a year, I think in this situation, if Nigel Pack, if he had to sit out a year, I think he's obviously less likely.
He'd already used that one.
He's probably sitting there going, I'll play a year for Tang and see if it works. And then I might go. Mm-hmm. But when you know that you can go play, and you can play it even if you could even go to Iowa State anywhere in your own conference, which I don't like that. I think if you enter the transfer portal, the one rule they should have is you can't transfer within your own conference. I don't like that. I really don't. It's almost like you're trading players. Okay, you got Coleman Lands and Iowa State gets Inaruna. No. Bryce Thompson goes to Oklahoma State. I would rather see these guys, not that it's a big deal, but I would rather see these, the only rule be that you can't go to, you can consider hundreds of schools out there at any level, D1, D2, D3, whatever, NAIA, whatever. But you just have to not be able, you can't, these 11 schools in this conference or these 10 or in the Big 12, of course, right now, the other nine, like Nigel Pack, you're good. You can go anywhere you want. You just can't go to any of the other nine institutions in the Big 12. I don't think that's too crazy to say. But in fairness, if you think your happiness is going to be, going from K-State to Oklahoma, you have the right to go there and the rules allow you to, so it's all good. I'm not blaming players for doing it. I'm just saying, me personally as a fan, would like you to go to another conference and make it big there instead of, but it adds a little intricacy of, hey, I can stick it to the man who I used to play for, didn't play me.
Yeah, and then I can look on the other side of that, right, and say if I'm a kid in Georgia, let's say I went to Alabama, right, mm-hmm. and I want to go back home and play at Georgia,
yeah,
right? This is football, basketball, whatever.
Right.
I can't. And in the SEC, as many teams keep getting added, you've wiped out 25% of the Power 5 schools that you can go to. And they're all close. If you want to go back home, those are all close to home, right? I mean, you go to Georgia.
There's other schools down there.
What I'm saying is these conferences are getting so big now that the more teams get added,
the more region is covered.
More regions come, and it's more. Mm-hmm. It's less opportunities to play at the Power 5 because you can't transfer within conference.
Yeah, right.
If you're that kind of player.
I get it. As a fan, I don't like it.
I'm not a huge fan of it.
Right. But if you're going to allow them to transfer wherever and they're immediately eligible, why not in conference? Or you could always say, in conference, you have to sit a year, but everywhere else you're allowed to play right away. That would deter people from doing it too. But yeah, you make a good point there. The Royals, they can do spring training. They win 5-4 over the A's. Vinny Pascatino, I don't know who this guy is, 2-for-4 with a 2-run homer. Chris Bubich gave up 1 run in 3 innings. Royals have 4 spring training games remaining. They face the Padres tonight, 8:40. Before yesterday's game, the Royals announced they've exercised the club option to keep their manager, Mike Matheny, through the 2023 season. Makes sense. He's 100 and 122 in his first 2 seasons with the Royals. Of course, we know the Royals are kind of rebuilding. And Zach Greinke was asked yesterday by the media, hey, Zach, what do you think about being named the opening day starter? This is classic Zach Greinke.
Zach, what was your reaction to finding out you were the guy?
Probably the same as my reaction right now.
And that's Zach Greinke. Doesn't seem to get too excited about much, does he?
No.
Can you imagine Zach Greinke at his wedding, or at his 18th birthday, or his 21st birthday, or his 40th birthday, and it's all about him? It's supposed to be a party for him. He just seems like he'd be a drag. Hey, Zach, you having a good time? Yeah. Hey, you need another beer, Zach? No.
Do you, Zach Greinke, take Mrs. Greinke?
I guess.
I suppose.
I guess. Would you like to take this lady to be your lovely wife for the rest of your life?
I suppose.
Sure. Yeah. That just sounds like Zach Greinke. Did you hear the story? I don't know if I told you guys this, and I have to keep it clean here. But Brady Singer and other young pitchers. Brady Singer is the one that's told this story. That you know, they wanted Greinke, when they brought Greinke back, the Royals were thinking he'd be a leader, help the younger guys, and but he'd do it in his own way, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so they're having a bullpen session at spring training earlier this year, okay? And Singer and Lynch and others are in the bullpen, and some of them, of course, you're watching a guy get up, throw so many pitches at the guy, and then the other guys are kind of sitting down on their butt next to the fence, you know, eating sunflower seeds, whatever the case may be, chatting, whatever. And apparently, I don't know what pitcher it was for the Royals, threw a slider. According to Brady Singer, Zach Greinke said, and I'm sure this is how he said it probably, "Dude, that was the bleepiest slider I've ever seen." And the word starts with S.
Yeah.
"That is the bleepiest slider I've ever seen." And that's all he said. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Get your point across in
a
few words.
No doubt
he is blunt.
He does it, and
I appreciate people that are blunt usually.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, whatever.
I like it. I like it. He'll be the opening day starter coming up in 6 days, Thursday, April 7th.
We're having a 40th birthday party for you. I'm not going to be there, so.
Yeah.
That's what probably his response.
That's probably right.
I'm not going to be there, so y'all have fun.
Got to read a book. All right. One of the highest regarded free agents still available in National Football League. Is now going to the Super Bowl champion L.A. Rams. He stays within division. Seahawks linebacker Bobby Wagner reached a 5-year, $50 million deal with L.A. Could be worth up to $65 million. The 31-year-old linebacker had 170 tackles last season for Seattle and earned his 8th Pro Bowl nod of his career. So he goes to the Rams. And we'll finish the show with a little Chiefs stuff. Tyrann Mathieu is still unsigned, according to a report. The Cowboys, the Colts, the Saints, the Broncos, the Eagles, the Ravens, Steelers, Cowboys, and Dolphins, and Raiders have some interest in Mathieu. How much, I don't know. Of course, part of that depends on your cap space, how much money you want to, you know, allow for a guy that's 29, close to being 30. From what I understand, the Cowboys probably don't have the cap space to do what they do that. I don't think the Dolphins seem like a possibility. The Raiders are going to work out an extension with the quarterback, so the Raiders probably seem to be out. From what I read, the Steelers don't want to spend that much money on a safety, in which I agree with. So now that leaves the Colts, the Broncos, the Eagles, and the Saints. And then there's the Ravens have been one that's been mentioned as well. Ravens, Eagles, Broncos, Saints, and Colts, maybe the five teams that have the best chance to sign Tyrann Mathieu. How would you feel if Tyrann Mathieu was a Denver Bronco as a Chiefs fan? Would that make you sick? Neil Smith went from Kansas City to Denver. I didn't like that, and that made me kind of sick.
I saw Jamal Charles put on a Broncos uniform.
That
you know, like just
watch.
Legendary Chiefs, right? Yeah. No matter what.
Thankfully, he was washed up.
Yeah, but
then.
No matter what part of their career they're in, it's just like.
Not right, is it?
It doesn't feel right. But Tyrann Mathieu's not that guy, right?
He was not. KC with 3 years.
He was there for 3 mm-hmm. years. Like, I understand what he did and brought to Kansas City, mm-hmm. but I don't think when we get further and further removed from this that Tyrann Mathieu's a guy that we're going to be like, oh, yeah, Chiefs all the way. That's the only thing I think of when I think of Tyrann Mathieu. So it's going to be a little bit different from that aspect. I wouldn't like it. I'm not going to say I would, but it wouldn't hurt quite as much as Neil Smith. I'll promise you that.
I hope he goes to NFC.
Well, I do too.
So if he goes to the Eagles or the Saints, Cowboys, I'm cool with it. It'd be weird if he went to the Dolphins and have Tyreek Hill and Tyrann Mathieu both playing for the Dolphins. That would be weird. Did you see the highlight video thanking Tyreek Hill the Chiefs put out there? Seemed to be a little too soon. It just didn't seem right watching Tyreek Hill's highlight videos only a week after he's been traded.
I was like, could we wait a little longer? Some highlights from the Bills game that they put on a couple days ago, right? And there's that pass into the back of the end zone to Tyreek, and I'm like, oh yeah, we're not going to see that.
That's
anymore.
Right.
For some reason, that's when it hit.
Finally
me,
hit
like,
you.
When I actually saw a highlight of
me
that.
Too.
And I'm like,
me too.
Oh.
Yeah, they replayed the highlight.
Happening anymore.
Replayed the highlight when he took it to the house against the Bills, and he should have got taunting, they said, because of the peace sign, which they didn't call.
Yeah.
And I see when he caught that and the speed and how he got by everybody on the far sideline, and that's when it hit me. I was like, oh, dear Lord, we're not going to have that weapon anymore. I still think the Chiefs made the right decision, but it will be a different type of offense to watch, no doubt. And that leads us to, what do the Chiefs do to replace Tyreek Hill? One guy can't replace him. Alex Smith came out and said that yesterday on national radio and TV. Of course, he knows all about it. He played with Hill for a couple of years. He said the Chiefs are going in a different way. He goes, they're going to try to be more balanced as a team. He said it makes sense, but he's a real difference maker. Even if he doesn't catch the ball, he changes what defenses do. Mm-hmm. He said there's all kinds of great wide receivers, but he's the only guy that makes you scared as a defense, even when he doesn't catch the ball. So and that's why a lot of people said that's why you got to pay Tyreek Hill the money, because he's one of a kind. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, he is, no doubt, but is he worth the money? I don't think he was for what the Chiefs are trying to do.
Not that money.
But maybe down the line we'll say that he should have been. He'll have a great 5 years or 4 years in Miami, and we'll sit back and go, wow, the Chiefs offense was never the same, and thus they never made it back to the Super Bowl. But there are a lot of rumors out there, and I think they're strictly rumors. I don't think there's a lot of anything to actually say. I've got sources that tell me this, because everybody does their own mock draft. And the easy, laziest thing to put in a mock draft right now is the Chiefs trade up to get a stud receiver. The Chiefs haven't showed their hand. They've got the ammunition to move up. There was somebody putting out there yesterday the Chiefs would trade their 29th and 30th pick and a 4th or a 5th to the Jets to move up to 10. And they move up 10, they would go get the top receiver on the board, according to most right now, would be Garrett Wilson, 6-foot wide receiver, runs a 4.38, which, by the way, is slower than Tyreek Hill and slower than Marquise Valdes-Scantling by barely a little bit. Garrett Wilson, wide receiver, Ohio State, 6'188", rated as the number one receiver out there. The second rated receiver is Drake London from USC, 6'5". And I don't think the Chiefs would go that route when they got already a 6'5 in Scantling. The guy that a lot of Chiefs fans really would love to have is a guy coming off a torn ACL, and that's Jameson Williams from Alabama, who runs a 4.25, which is actually just right there with Tyreek Hill. He's taller at 6'2". He's 189, so he's a little more slender than Tyreek. Tyreek is a little bit more stout. And there are a lot of people saying, well, Jameson Williams, if he falls to the Chiefs at 29 or 30, I'm going to go out on another big, huge limb. Jameson Williams will not be there at 29 or 30.
Not at 29, no.
I don't think he'll even drop past 15. Jameson Williams, I think people, it just depends on how they feel about the ACL. If I'm picking wide receiver here, Garrett Wilson seems good. I'm drafting Jameson Williams above Drake London of USC. And I'll tell you another guy that some people really like, and he's smaller, not as fast as Tyreek Hill, but still a 4.4, but he's a really good possession receiver, and that would be Jahan Dotson, who could easily be there at 29 or 30, and the Chiefs don't have to trade up to get him. That'd be an interesting pick. Another one that some people have talked about is George Pickens, 6'3", 200-pound receiver, a little bigger receiver, runs a 4.4. But Jameson Williams, that 4.25 speed stands out, doesn't it? Now, he's come off a torn ACL, but would the Chiefs be willing to trade up? Because they got plenty of picks. Would they be willing to trade up and try to get that star receiver so that? Because right now what the Chiefs have is they have Juju Smith-Schuster, who's never been a number one receiver. He's had a season where he caught almost 100 balls, but he was number two behind Antonio Brown. They've got Marquise Valdes-Scantling, who's been a number three wide receiver, not a number two and definitely not a number one. Am I leaving somebody out? Scantling.
McCole Hardman.
He's not a one, as we know. He's been more of a three. So you might have three twos at best. Kelsey really is your number one, but he's a tight end.
Yeah.
You still need that. You still need another receiver or two, obviously, to fill out the mix. But in regards to a number one wide receiver, can you win in this league with twos and threes and four receivers? Yeah. Tom Brady won, and he didn't have a stud number one receiver all the time. Sometimes he made a guy like Wes Welker become a number one.
Yeah.
But if there's a missing piece in the offensive puzzle, it would be that they don't have the bona fide, clear-cut number one wideout like they had at Tyreek Hill. Will they chase that, trade some draft capital to move up to get that guy in the first round? A lot of people believe the Chiefs will. I'm not sold they will. If they did, I'm okay with it, but I'd rather see them go get a pass rusher that they just absolutely love, that they are fully convinced is a difference maker. I would rather him trade up to get that guy, and I still think you can get a really good receiver later in the second or third round. And once again, it might just be another two or three, but I think if Mahomes is a good enough – this is the way I look at it. If Mahomes is a once-in-a-generation talent, if he's a phenomenal talent, which I think we believe he is, why can't he win with Juju Smith-Schuster, Marquise Valdes-Scantling, McCole Hardman, and another young wide receiver and then maybe a veteran into the mix? Why does he have to have a number one, a clear-cut number one? Teams have done it before without a clear-cut number one running back. Teams have done it before without a great defense. Teams have done it before with not a great tight end. Some have done it without a great offensive line. Why can't Patrick Mahomes prove to everybody, I don't need Tyreek Hill. I can do things and spread it out and share the ball better, become a better quarterback. Maybe it's okay that the Chiefs don't have a clear-cut number one.
Yeah, well, and you can always go. I, you know, one of the things that I look at, too, is like, what if Valdez-Scantling is better than what we're making him out to be?
And he can elevate himself to a solid 2 or 1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been playing behind Davante Adams and Randall Cobb mm-hmm. during his career, right?
Even Al Lazard.
And Lazard, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, but Davante Adams is the number one. So you're obviously not going to ever be the number one for the Packers,
no,
right?
No. Well, he could be this year if you're running back.
Well, yeah.
They're all
yeah. Down. But he went and got
– right.
Apparently got his bag, but not as much as he could have because he said he took less to come to the Chiefs.
Right.
But – you know, I feel like that kid's better than what people are giving him credit for.
I agree.
And just watching
could
the,
be a sleeper.
The skill set that he has. And I feel like between him and Juju, they're going to make it work.
I do, too.
And it doesn't have to be, oh, this guy's the number one receiver. It can be two guys that are making things difficult for the defense. So you got to figure out which way to go.
And the other thing that makes that easier to deal with is you have the best tight end in football.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have Hardman's speed, too.
Yeah. If you didn't have the best tight end football, like if you said you had a middle-of-the-road tight end, then my tune might be different. I might say, well, you really do maybe need that bona fide go-to number one. To me, they're bona fide number one receiver. Yeah, well, let's be honest. Travis Kelce is like a hybrid. He's a tight end wide receiver, you know?
No. Kelce has always will be Patrick Mahomes' number one guy.
I agreed. As long as he's healthy, yeah.
With Tyreek Hill on the team, Travis Kelce is the guy to look for.
I agreed. Security blanket, no doubt. You gonna say something?
I just don't think you have to move up to get a receiver this year. I just think the difference between that Treylon Burks from Arkansas and Jameson Williams isn't that much. Okay. Granted, I think I'd want Jameson Williams, obviously, but I don't think you have to trade up that far. Now, if the draft day comes and Jameson Williams gets past 20 and you haven't made a move.
I could see the trade. Now we give up less to get him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to get all the way up to 15 or 10 to get a bona fide superstar receiver, I don't think you really have to do that. I think some of the guys that are going to be picked at 20 to 25 to 29 and 30
I agree.
Are going to be good enough.
I agree. And wide receivers deep in this draft. The only thing I'll differ with you on that is I said in earlier, in self I trust. In Brett Veach I trust, and here's why. The last time the Chiefs moved all the way to number 10, they got a guy that worked out pretty well, Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. They were and a lot of people thought it was a bad pick. There's still freezing takes out there on social media. There are a lot of people thought it was a horrible pick. They should have taken Deshaun Watson. That's what people thought they were going to do. And the Chiefs moved up and got a guy they believed in. They were like, this is a can't-miss guy. We got to go get him. And they traded quite a bit to move up 17 spots to the Bills spot and take Mahomes at number 10. This is where I'll differ with you. I agree to an extent. But if the Chiefs, not me, they don't have to convince me, they don't have to convince Dusty or Jason or anybody. If Brett Veach and Andy Reid are convinced that there is a star wide receiver in this draft that is maybe somewhere in the likes of Ja'Marr Chase, and he's sitting there at 10, and pick number 8 and 9 are getting ready to be made, and that guy's still on the board, that guy's there at 10, and the Chiefs know they got ammunition, and they've already had some preliminary talks, and if the Chiefs are sold, and they brought him in for visits, we don't know what they talk about, we know that they were impressed with Mahomes when they had their visits with him, if they are convinced that there's a wideout, despite how deep this draft is, and as Jason said, probably many of these wideouts will have good NFL careers, but if they're convinced that there's this guy that is just going to be perfect for their system, perfect for Patrick Mahomes, and they are sold on this guy, then if they don't be surprised on draft day, if the Chiefs trade 29, 30, and a fourth round pick, or whatever they do, to move all the way to 10 or 8 or 15, I'm going to just, it might be a receiver that we sitting here going, it ain't Jameson Williams, and it isn't Garrett Wilson, it might be somebody else, and you're going to go, oh, what are we doing? Just remember, that's what people said back when they drafted Mahomes, and they knew what they were doing, they knew what they saw, they had no doubts about it, and if they have a guy that they have no doubts about, that they want to go get, and they know they have the guys to trade or draft picks to get it, then I'm all for it, no matter who they draft, I'm going to trust Brett Veach.
Yeah. And Dusty's made this point before. They're not going to make all 12 of those picks.
Oh, no.
So somewhere there is going to be a trade.
Somewhere.
Now, I guess I'm believing it's going to be for a pass rusher or a corner, but they'll use one of those two first-round picks along with some of the extra picks they have to get up.
Probably
I don't know
so.
If all the way up to 10, but somewhere, and it'll be a pass rusher or a corner, and use the other one on a receiver. That's what I think, but I, like you said, last time they made that big move.
Mm-hmm. It worked out pretty well.
It worked out really well.
And they got a couple picks in. They got two picks in every one of the first four rounds. They could package some third and fourth to move up in the second again. Like, not even necessarily in the first. Yeah. Got to keep that in mind. So I think they're going to be fine with this whole thing, but it will be intriguing to see if they actually do trade up like a lot of people have talked about. So
yeah,
I mean, sure. I'm intrigued. It's a very it's not as a mundane offseason had they just signed Tyreek Hill to the contract and kept him. This is makes things a little bit more exciting and fun, I think, for Chiefs fans. And there is the unknown, and we know how bad Chiefs fans felt about the unknown when Smith was traded and Mahomes was brought in. And I'd say that worked out pretty well. Sometimes the unknown can be okay.
Sometimes,
unless it's April Fool's prank.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.